unwarranted music opinion. Unwarranted music opinion. I don't care if you don't want to hear my opinion about your robot.
Welcome to Unwarranted Music Opinions, the show in which three music fans choose an album, force each other to listen to them over the course of a week, and then convene to talk about them and cross our fingers that nobody gives one of our favorite albums of all time
a strong
5
six.
Out of 10. I'm Jacob Lindberg. I'm here with Brian Courtney.
Hey.
And Chaz Jenkins.
I don't know, but that might have been a jab at me. We'll find out.
And this episode is one of our favorites to do. It's a sequel episode. We are going to be talking about artists that we have already discussed on the show, and we're going to kick this one off with Chaz's pick.
I guess it's something in my brain. I need whiskey to ease the pain. But it's early in the morning.
So the album I've picked is 12 Golden Country Greats by one of my favorite bands of all time, Ween. The first time I talked about Ween with the guys was in our Unhinged episode with God, Ween, Satan, The Oneness. I gave it a 9. I thought it was just a crazy roller coaster of an album that was just such a blast to listen to. Guys, what did you give it and what did you like about it?
I gave it an 8. It was pretty much classic Ween, maybe just a little more lo-fi and a little more unhinged, considering it was their early material, but a bunch of different varieties of style, all done very, very well, as Ween are wont to do. Great songwriting and just a very manic and insane energy.
It's cool. I typically try to revisit these things before, as we come back, like I'll go give like a cursory listen to the album. So I've gone down on this a little bit. I think originally I gave it a strong 8 and I'm still at like an 8, but I would maybe tend towards like a lower, like a less weighted 8. It's still great. Like, and it's insane. It's a storm, but like not everything works out on here. There are a couple of tracks that are kind of forgettable, especially like the 9-minute Nicole. And in my opinion, Birthday Boy.
That's like one of your worst opinions ever.
But there's some, like, the first, like, 4 or 5 songs on here, like, Bumblebee and, like, UF'd Up are amazing. And, like, Limlip, of course. You know, Limlip, strong 10. But, yeah, it was really good. So this was exciting to go into. I knew I wouldn't be disappointed.
So, yeah, this album is Ween's Dip into Country, which, at first, you'd think this is going to be a train wreck. But, no, this is probably one of Ween's best albums they've ever made. 12 Golden Country Greats was recorded in Nashville. It has a very distinct Nashville country sound, which personally is probably one of my more preferable styles of country. I think this the sound of this album is awesome. Going into it, I only heard 2 of the songs, which I thought were some of my favorite Ween songs, so I was very excited to listen to the whole album. I kind of already spoiled how I think about it right there, but what do you guys think?
This album is great. I was expecting it to be, honestly. I had heard it before, probably years ago. I think my dad showed it to me at some point, especially
that's
the song,
amazing.
The song Pee Up a Rope, which is how we should refer to it during this episode. But it's hilarious, and the thing that really makes it stand out for me is the instrumentation and the songwriting.
Oh, the lead work on this is fantastic.
It's fantastic. Yes, the soloing, the acoustic guitar soloing is fantastic.
Any instrument that gets a solo in this kills it.
And that's because Ween weren't just making like a pastiche of country music. Like, they were in Nashville. They were working with session musicians who've been there for years. Famous musicians like Charlie McCoy and a few others. But that's, I think, one of the main reasons why the instrumentation and the soloing, as you said, is so fantastic. I was reading some interviews with musicians about this album, about the recording process. There were a few Nashville musicians who were going to be on this album and balked once they saw the lyrics to some of these songs.
Yeah, Ween's classic lyricism are in full swing here with songs like Japanese Cowboy, Pee Up a Rope.
Scrape the Mucus Off My Brain.
No, that is a sad song, but I was referring to Mr. Richard Smoker. Undeniably, the funniest song on this album.
Amazing.
Doodly Baboop Bow.
Diddly Baboop.
That used to be my favorite song, but Help Me Scrape the Mucus Off My Brain is probably my favorite song off this record.
What a plight.
Oh my God. But Mr. Richard Smoker has the best instrumentation. Like, it's the best song because of just, when that trumpet comes in and has a little more of like a Louisiana kind of like jumpy jazz sound to it, and it kind of switches it up a little bit. And that tuba in the background, God, blows me away every time I hear it.
And then he says, you know, anything that's said on the track, and you're kind of like,
yeah,
okay.
Unfortunately, we cannot refer to any of the lyrics on that song.
I can't think of "you eat dark meat." That's pretty much all we can do, right?
Yeah, and you're a Yoko owner.
And if at this point,
I looked, or it's a Ono Yoker or something like that. I don't know. I looked everywhere for what that meant. I'm aware of what it alludes to. I just don't know what it means.
And if at this point you don't know what it's referring to, Mr. Richard Spoker is about the tales of a gay man out on the
prowl.
Yeah, but you know, great song, but holy crap, don't listen to it with your parents. Which is what I did.
You said it. Oh no!
Hell yeah!
I listened to it with my dad, and I didn't know what the song meant. So when it started, he's like, he paused it. He's like, Chaz, you know what the song is referring to?
This was yesterday.
This was like.
But once we got out of the way, we listened to it and we all laughed our asses off. Oh man.
I do really enjoy that song. It's pretty great instrumentally, but it's not my favorite. Mm. I think, honestly, like the single fantastic, like the best moment musically on this entire album
is the latter half of
the acoustic guitar solo in "Help Me Scrape the Mucus Off My Brain."
Yes,
it's really good. Don't get me wrong,
it's beautiful.
And that song, God, Dean Ween, when he gets like his moment to sing, like his song, it's some of the best stuff ever. His vocal delivery on that track is just, it's such a silly song, but it's kind of emotional. It's kind of emotional. I think I spent the dog food money.
Yeah, it is. It alludes to alcoholism, I think. But but in a way, only Ween really could. You know, like some really specific, funny.
I mean,
phrasing.
This album is full of like bittersweet ballads.
Yeah, it is.
Which honestly, I think
which plays into that kind of country.
Exactly. That's like the one of the things that I think country does fantastically. Like it's like one of my favorite things to hear in the genre. Is just sad balladry, and you get that all across this album. I would even say that the ballads kind of outshine the more upbeat cuts on this thing.
I actually feel the opposite. I feel the opposite, because like cuts like Powder Blue is kind of a moment that's like, Powder Blue is a little more upbeat, but it's really repetitive. I guess my point would be like, I think I like a Pee Up a Rope or a Scrape the Mucus Off My Brain as opposed to a Holding You or even
I'm Holding You, yeah.
Or even like Fluffy. Just I really like
Fluffy's
Ween's humor.
Fantastic closer.
Even I'm not really I would no track on here is bad. More like there's really not a bad track on it. The closest we come to bad is maybe Powder Blue.
I absolutely disagree.
And really with the second half of the song, it's kind of a hard case to make.
I mean the second with all of the different solos and the shout outs
exactly.
to different musicians,
like,
the steel guitar on that track
is
fantastic.
It sounds great.
The background vocals, the bop bas are that track, you are.
But I just don't like the songwriting's just not there. It's very repetitive, and I think it kind of hurts the song, in my opinion.
I don't think it goes on long enough for that to be an issue for me personally.
It doesn't grate. I wouldn't say it grates or anything. It's a little long winded. But by the time we get to the second half of the track, I'm ready for him to introduce. And I
honestly
think it's funny when he's introducing everyone, even though it's not meant to be. You know what I mean?
Honestly, I kind of agree with both of you. Like, I agree with Brian that it does get a little repetitive, but I agree with Jacob that once the solos hit, I don't even care.
Yeah, it's still a great song.
Fantastic. It totally makes up for any gripe I would have had for the song. Because God bless, the solo work on this album is some of the best I've ever heard.
So I was looking into this album again, you know, the history of it, and when it came out, it was received with very mixed critical acclaim, and I really don't get that. I feel like,
well, probably because before this, they released Chocolate and Cheese. They're probably most like
exactly
well, like, best acclaimed album, you know.
Well, they're Ween, and I feel like their reputation probably preceded them for a lot of people, you know. A Ween's doing a country album. This is going to be terrible, or this can't possibly be good. Which is weird, considering they've done country songs on earlier albums very well.
This is one of my favorite South Park jokes. It's one of their earlier seasons, where it's the episode where Chef holds like a benefit concert, and Ween performed there. They like voice themselves, and it's like, Chef is the one that convinced us to do a country album. Thanks, Chef! Oh, man, one of my favorite jokes there.
But I think this album isn't just like, you know, Ween does a country album. Like, it's a genuinely fantastic country album on its own. You mm-hmm. know, even if Ween's name or the Ween humor, if that was all taken away, the melodies, the songwriting, the instrumentation, it would still all be fantastic.
See, for me, like, Ween's personality adds so much more to this album for me than the instrumentation. I'm not wowed by the instrumentation here. I think it's really good. Don't get me wrong. It's the perfect backdrop for, like, it's great on all these songs. Really not a single song on here where the instrumentation doesn't fit or is bad or is wonky or is stuttering, et cetera, and so on. Even when we get these super, like, God, Ween, Satan-ish guitars on Pee Up a Rope. And that song is the most God, Ween, Satan on this whole thing.
Yeah,
and it's
the guitar sounds like a mechanical, like, sci-fi insect.
Yeah.
It's one of the weirdest moments.
But it's still a country
song. It's the
song.
Second track. Or no, it's not my
third
mistake.
Track.
It's the third track on the album.
It's still a country song, though, through and through. And I don't think you can dispute that. So, I don't
know.
It
would give this album the tag of alt-country, which is kind of was a big thing in the mid-90s.
Oh, yeah, like with Beck.
With Wilco and Beck doing some country stuff. Yeah. I have to mention the fiddle. On this album, anytime the fiddle comes up, man, the moment the fiddle comes in on You Were the Fool is just, it gives you chills, honestly, because that particular track is probably my favorite on the album.
Mm.
You Were the Fool.
Yeah,
it has these shimmering guitars. It's very ethereal, but it's still grounded with the melody. The melody is fantastic. The lyrics are really, really nice. They're contemplative. They're bittersweet. They're very evocative. You know, bless the father, bless the son, cross your heart because you're the one collecting moonbeams in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
There's these droning feedback-laden guitars near the end of the song, and it fits perfectly well.
The best moment is Mr. Richard Smoker to Fluffy. That chunk of the album has some of the best moments on it for me. But I mean, every song is just is such a fun time. I love bittersweetness, but I love it when it's not taken so seriously.
Right.
There is so much fun on this album too, especially in those solos. I cannot praise the solos on Mr. Richard Smoker enough. It's just like they're having so much fun in the studio, each with doing their own thing. There's a clarinet solo, and it's like, oh my God, it's so good.
And to mention Fluffy, it's a ballad about a dog, and it's funny, and it's tongue-in-cheek and everything, but the chord progression is really just, like, mysterious, and it's proving that this is more than just a joke. Like, the chord progression and the melody.
Ween's entire discography is more than just a joke.
Exactly.
Musician-wise, like, the guides are gods. They can't do no wrong.
They're great players, and they have great...
They can't do no wrong.
They can't do no wrong.
They have great playing across their discography from my very limited experience. Like, there's really no... Usually when I don't like a Ween song, it's down to songwriting. A performance I'm not totally into, because I tend to prefer the wilder, funnier side of Ween as opposed to their more serious stuff. But I mean, even still, like,
you kind of get a good blend of that here.
Yeah, and that's another thing I like about this album.
It's short too. It's only like 36 minutes. It just goes by.
It's a pretty breezy album. My biggest complaint, though, is that I think there is a lull around the middle for me personally, from track 4 to track 6. It picks up after towards the latter half of Powder Blue. But I Don't Want to Leave You on the Farm is, like, just a little too understated for me. In fact, I would just call it understated in general. It's not a moment that I'm dying to come back to, and I kind of just wish we went into Powder Blue, honestly.
Pretty Girl?
I think the fiddle on Pretty Girl justifies the track's existence, and more than justifies its existence.
It's got a really fun chorus that's fun to sing along to.
Most tracks on here are actually really sing along. It's weird. I guess my biggest strengths for this album are Ween's sense of humor, and that's like my favorite thing
which
about Ween.
I knew you would love.
I'm Holding You. I love leading the chorus. He's like, I've got something more precious than ore.
He goes, and I actually wrote this down in my notes. I love the way he says, "Fine ore, baby." Like
baby.
The pause between fine ore and baby.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you think about... It's like five dots, you know?
You think about it, you're like, ore. I don't know. I just thought it was a really funny, like, choice. The entirety of Pee Up a Rope is hilarious. Like, not a single... Like, it's the vocal performance, like...
It's one of their most favorite, like, of the Ween fan base. Pee Up a Rope is always one of the people go to.
It's completely absurd. Mr. Richard Smoker is also hilarious. I love Help Me Scrape the Mucus Off My Brain as well. Fluffy grew on me with time. And I agree that, like, it is really goofy. Like, it's a very goofy take, but it... But the instrumentation, it's like, yeah, it is really like sad. It's like, oh, hey, this is kind of, but the thing is, I can't tell how serious it's supposed to be. I don't know if this is about a real dog. I can't tell. Or if they were like, make this sound as sad as possible. It's like, all right, give me that mic.
Well, I think that's not what happened, actually.
It was
recorded at a faster speed and then slowed down.
Oh,
so
and
they,
you can tell, yeah.
You can tell, like his vocals, you can tell.
Because I was
going
to say, I think it is meant to be serious. If I had to guess, because that would make sense for like how the album flows. Like we have some goofy, some kind of bittersweet. Then Help Me Scrape the Mucus Off My Brain has such a, while silly lyrics, a very serious thing about alcoholism.
And You Were the Fool,
mentioned.
Honestly, I think is one of the more serious moments as well.
Yeah,
I
would call and that then the into most Fluffy, serious. Like that's, I think it's meant to be not a joke.
It could be. Lyrically, it could be, but it doesn't matter because the chord progression, one of the comparisons that I thought of was Guinevere by Crosby, Stills, and Nash, which just has this super mysterious and ethereal sounding chord progression in this really weird, crazy guitar tuning that David Crosby made up. And the progression on Fluffy is nearly as mysterious sounding as that, and that's a huge accomplishment. Mm-hmm. They just come up with a really, really beautiful and interesting guitar sound and chord progression on that song, and it really
slow it down.
Makes
that's
it great
crazy.
For me. Yeah,
this album's really good. It's not as much of a storm as Godween Satan is, but there are fewer moments on here than Godween Satan that I really would say I loved or was completely enthralled by while I was listening. There's songs like Powder Blue, Japanese Cowboy that for the most part are good, but don't click with me in the same way. Like I acknowledge they're good, but I'm just not that into them. I don't think they're as great as the funnier cuts on here, or even like I'm Holding You, which I think is a great song and a great opener. Hard to say I love this album, but you know, I think I love Ween. So I would
yourself a disservice if you don't just explore their catalog.
I would probably go with a strong 7 on this one. I think the more I look into Ween, this one's going to sit at the back of my mind. It's not like my like least favorite in quotes, but I mean, when your least favorite is a 7, I doubt I'm going to find anything worse than this in their acclaimed essentials. Now, I'm not going to go listen to like Bananas and Blow, but like...
But that is one of their best songs.
That's a great song.
Bananas and Blow. Oh my God.
What album is that off of?
That's off White Pepper.
Yeah.
White Pepper.
It's
okay.
Not Get Enough Love.
I've been getting into that one recently. But yeah, I think a 7 is, I mean, this is like a perfect example. I mean, from your perspective, you know, enjoying an album a lot, but not quite loving it. That would be my criteria for a 7 as well. But I do love this album. So I'm going to go with an 8 on this one. There are a few moments, like Pretty Girl, which doesn't have as great of a melody as some of the other songs. Mr. Richard Smoker isn't one of my favorites, honestly.
It has some of the best solos, though.
It doesn't stick out in my mind as much as the tracks that are before it and after it. And I do think that the ballads kind of overshadow the more upbeat songs. But all of that said, it's very consistently good. The playing is fantastic and melodic and interesting. It's not just, you know, noodling for noodling's sake. Like, there's some really, really interesting and melodic solos here, of course, because they were working with Nashville studio musicians. So this is just a really, really solid album. And 8 out of 10 for me.
I'm going to give it a strong 9. God bless.
That's your best opinion in your whole life. Not even like full stop, not even just related to music. Like that's your best opinion you've ever had in life.
It is such a fantastic album from start to finish with some of the best solo work I've ever heard in my entire life. Each song is catchy, sing-along, funny-ass lyrics, some kind of bittersweet lyrics, something to love for every song. God!
I don't care if the sun don't shine, but it better all people will wonder. No man.
The album that I have chosen is the second studio release by John Prine. We discussed John Prine way back in the early days of the podcast.
That was our third episode.
Yeah, talked about his self-titled debut, which is one of my personal favorite albums of all time. It had a pretty solid reception from the two of you. It was a 10 out of 10 for me. And that album saw Prine pretty much some great country songwriting across the whole thing. But the number one thing that draws me to it is the lyrics on that album. He's just a fantastic lyricist. Before I let you know that this is going to be the album I chose, I let you know that this release is a bit different than the debut. It's a lot rawer. There's hardly any production going on here at all. It's a lot more pessimistic, and it's quite a bit more depressing. So yeah, I'm going to just leave it to you guys.
Well, I gave the original John Prine an 8. I really loved lyrics. I thought instrumentally it was just a pleasant album to listen to. It was just a good time. And I thought just some of the jabs he was taking at religion and politics and some of the themes he was dealing with about loneliness and were just really, really interesting and made me just love that there's great country out there that always deserves love. And just that stereotype of all country is bad. No, it's just pop country that's bad. Get it right.
I went with a strong 8 or a light 9. I lean more towards a strong 8 nowadays upon revisiting it. Really strong. Like, it is really great. And it's all down to his sharp humor, his great storytelling. And he, like, there's really no ambiguity with any song that he's written. And I would say that's true of Diamonds in the Rough as well. He's spelling it all out for you, usually in telling a story in the process. And I love the subject matter he cherry picks for these stories. You know, we get a lot of stuff relating to military life or, American nationalism or kind of, you know, blind patriotism more so. A bit of religion and a sense of humor that gives a track brevity when it needs it. And it is never excessive or unfunny. It's always really charming. And vocal performances that are an instrumentation as well that is basic but gets the job done and is good. You know, it's as a baseline, it's good. But really, the big selling point here is the storytelling and the sense of humor that Prine brings.
Now, this album, holy crap. I was telling Jacob about this before the podcast. I said, so let's think about this. If John Prine is his blue album, this is John Prine's Pinkerton. Because, holy crap.
I don't like this.
This is just a sad album. Lyrically, musically, vocally, a lot of the tracks, while deal with more like religion, government, you know, your typical stuff that he would sing about.
Same subject matter from Prime, more or
most
less.
Most of the songs here, about himself.
There's a lot to
deal
with.
There's a lot of introspective talk. And even in the songs where he's talking about religion, he mentions himself. He takes a jab at himself saying, God, I'm so lonely.
And the fact that there's so much less production and so much, like the instrumentation here, I would say, draws a lot from bluegrass, a lot more than the debut did.
It's more cut back. There's like no solos, no organ or any other instruments that were on the debut.
I mean, but there is some soloing in the form of, you've got some pretty great mandolin that pops up here.
Yeah, but it's very subtle. It's more in the back. You have to really listen to it to hear it. Mm-hmm. John Prine's in the front. And his singing, I thought, was pretty pleasant. Here, it's like he took a swig of whiskey before every take of the song. It's so coarse and rough.
Yeah, his vocals
are... And it adds so much to the emotion that he's singing.
Far less polished, especially on the closer here. Like, in the way they're layered, it's a little chilling.
Oh, yeah. It is absolutely fantastic. The way that he ends it with, like, an Appalachian close harmony.
Mm-hmm.
That is such a good way to end this
Some
album.
Of the best songs, Sour Grapes, Billy the Bum, The Frying Pan.
Frying Pan is great.
The Great Compromise, good God.
Man, that line on that song where he talks about, I'm pretty sure it's the one where he says, I could have fought that boy, people call me a coward, but
yeah.
He's talking about his time in Vietnam. He's like, I know about fighting for something that's not right. Like, that is pretty mind-blowing as far as lyrical moments on this album.
And in 1972, holy crap.
Yeah, this album makes a pretty huge statement. And the thing is, Vietnam veterans come home and get a terrible reception from people, not just, you know, not getting what they need in terms of resources from their country, but upon returning, being socially ostracized.
Right.
John Prine is able to simultaneously criticize the government and the military for, you
doing
know,
that in the first
things
place.
That happened in Vietnam, but he's also, at the same time, able to criticize that reception. And with songs like Billy the Bum,
mm-hmm.
And songs like Take the Star Out of the Window, he's able to, he's very empathetic to the veterans. He's basically on their side. He's not on the side of the people who sent them to Vietnam, and he's not on the side of the people who are ostracizing them. Even though he thinks Vietnam was a bad idea, he's on the side of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of songs here, like there was with like Sam Stone on the debut, where he's talking about individuals and people and their struggle.
So that was your favorite song on his debut. What's your favorite song here? Like, what's the best song here for you?
It's really hard because there's so many good ones.
And you know what? It's crazy because this album just got so much better with each listen. My first listen, I thought, man, this is slow. I'm not really digging it. It's more stripped back. Second listen, completely flipped. And just each more after that, I was like, this is amazing. I think it's better than the debut. I honestly think so, just because of how more emotional it is, more gripping it is. And it's not too long. It's pretty short. It's about 30. It's just about the same runtime of Ween's album. But it says so much in so little time.
I wouldn't personally say it's depressing. I just think it's very melancholy. And it is pessimistic at its core. But I wouldn't call it depressing because
it's just very introspective.
Honestly, I do think it's pretty depressing at some points. And here are a few reasons why. Like, Billy the Bum, I didn't realize that song was as sad as it is. Mm. A lot of these songs here, and this album has gotten better for me for every listen, part of that is because of the lyrics, where there's so much depth. So, for example, on Billy the Bum, it's a song about, you know, a bum who's living over by the railroad track. The kids make fun of him and everything. Which is kind of I don't know if you'd say stereotypical or cliche, but that's kind of like a stereotype for a bum. But John Prine takes it to this different place when he goes back to his childhood, to Billy's childhood. And there's the line, which is just so sad. He was just a gentle boy, a real fluorescent light. He's talking about how happy and how optimistic this kid was. Mm. And then he's contrasting that with where he is now. And then you have bullets can't harm him, nor your knives tear him apart. Humiliation killed him.
Yeah.
It's tragic. There's a lot of tragic moments.
And there's moments on that on the debut, but not. They were very few and far between. This one, it's like every other track. It's just so sad. And if it's not about some, like, the war or religion, it's about himself. And, man, he is... just taking all the
Here's
punches.
A line from Take the Star Out of the Window, which is about a veteran
that is
coming
my
home.
Favorite song on this whole record.
Only fresh out of the cradle, life's one and only spring, he was sworn to do his duty and got blood on his high school ring.
Yep.
So he's just out of high school, goes to war.
I know.
Got blood on his high school ring. It's just
Souvenirs is another good one.
Souvenirs
too.
Might be my favorite.
It's my second favorite.
I absolutely adore the concept, you know, losing your happy, pleasant memories, wondering where the time went.
It's kind of smart, too. I love that frying pan's in the middle because it's, like, the most happiest-sounding song. So it's a good, like, checkpoint into the album.
And Yes, I Guess They Ought to Name a Drink After You is right after that as well. Yeah. So it kind of lightens the mood a little bit.
And John Prine knew that. He's like, I'm going to make a really depressing album, so I want to throw a few, like, I guess little ditties, you'd call them, that are fun to sing along to and aren't as, you know, emotional or reality-based as my rest of the song. So I appreciate him doing that. The track placement here is so well thought out.
It is, oh my gosh, yeah. It's albumized perfectly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where part of my criticism, even though it's a perfect album to me, I could criticize the debut because there is kind of a lull in the back half for me.
And we talked about that too in the episode.
Here, this album, as a straight-through listen, is even better put together than the debut was.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, man, even though I would still say I prefer the debut overall because it has higher highs, you know, I don't think anything here beats Sam Stone or Hello in There, for example. But as an album, sometimes I would rather listen to this one. It has a different kind of feel to it. It's like the difference between After the Gold Rush by Neil Young and Tonight's the Night by Neil Young. One is produced, one is very focused, one is, you know, has all of this kinds of instrumentation on it. The other one is raw, it's sad, it's depressing, and it's emotional. I would compare John Prine's vocals on this album to Neil Young's vocals on Tonight's the Night, and just that level of
how coarse
a lack of polish. And it works perfectly with the sound and the lyrical subject matter.
My only gripe is that I do prefer the music of the debut more than this, but I love how much well thought out the music here is on this album to coincide with what the lyrics are talking about. It's all thought out. It's all well put together. Every choice, every decision made by John Prine had a purpose. And I always applaud artists that are able to do that with any sort of project. But man, oh man.
And, you know, we've talked about the lyrics a lot, and I could choose lyrical moments from every single track on this album.
There's
like,
so
for
many,
example,
like,
the first,
so many
one of the first
drops,
lines
yeah.
on Everybody where he says, Jesus, you look tired. And Jesus says, Jesus, so do you. Yeah. And it's just...
That's a great moment.
It's
right
a
out of the gate.
Phenomenal line. But the music here, while it is stripped back and more raw, I do think it's fantastic. I think that every single instrument, the arrangements are beautiful. The melodies are fantastic pretty much all the way through. I really don't think there's a weak moment on this album.
And it's still
just so consistent.
It's still catchy. It would, despite of how sad or stripped back it is, it still manages to get stuck in your head, which I really applaud, because it's really hard to do something of this nature and not still make a catchy song.
It's hard to do Guy with an Acoustic Guitar album and make it gripping. It's been done, and it was done a lot in the 70s, but it's still, like, you have to be especially compelling to make that work. And he absolutely makes it work.
Even though this thing is a total flip from the debut, like, the production is completely taken away. The vocal performances are way more raw. There's way more sadness injected into this thing. Pretty much every track on here has glimmers of hope at the most, if you could call it that in some of the tracks here. And the humor on this album is used as a denial tool for what's going on in these songs. There's the humor here, really, past Everybody, is only like acting as like a soft blow to the immense weight of the sadness on some of these songs.
And I would say, as far as the humor goes, it does add a bit of levity. It makes this album easier to listen to.
As we mentioned before, it's like a perfect puzzle put together. Mm-hmm. He knew that if I'm going to have a lot more sadness, I got to have some levity tracks in there to not only make it easier for the listener, but also break up the constant sadness.
Right. If this album was depressing through and through, it would still be great, but it would be harder to listen to. This is an album that you can throw on a whim, and even though it's sad, you can still enjoy the fantastic instrumentation and songs, and John Prine's humor and wit is still there.
And I don't even think it's that, it's got some depressing moments, but still the music and the way it vibes, this album makes me feel two different ways, depending on the song. One, it makes me feel like I'm on a porch watching a sunset. The other one is, it makes me feel like I'm on the porch watching a sunset while my house is being evicted. That's how I would describe this listening experience.
That's a really good way to put it, actually. This is a really fantastic album. I've heard it quite a bit, and the more I listen to it, even now, despite how simple it is and despite how there is deceptively little to dig into, it just keeps growing on me. And like I said, I still, maybe on paper, prefer the debut, and I would, you know, maybe go back to the debut a little more often. But there are some times where I would choose this one over the debut. It goes back and forth. This is just, and it's such an underrated album, too. When this came out, it was panned. There was mixed reception because
of
the musical direction that he went in. You know, it's kind of a 180.
It's always going to be when the artist wants to do something different because they know they got more tricks up their sleeve. They're always going to get panned for it because they just expect the same thing.
I mean, look, the same thing happened to Ween with 12 Golden Country Grapes.
Same thing happened to Weezer. Good God. The triangle. Sorry. My tinfoil hat is showing.
But yeah, this is... Like,
I might
the
cut
strongest.
That out. That was stupid.
This
I'm
is...
so sorry. I don't know what I was thinking. I thought it was funny, but...
Yeah, keep it.
This is like the strongest possible nine. I mean, it just keeps going up in my estimation.
I can't really say this thing is better than the debut, but it is on par, 100%. The debut looks in a mirror. It sees diamonds in the rough, I think, to kind of put it metaphorically. So I would go with like a decent to strong 8 on this one. I maybe preferred some of the songs on the debut more. Like, it's going to be hard to beat a Sam Stone.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, I would say Sam Stone still beats everything on this
I mean,
album.
That little pitcher's line is incredible. Like, mm-hmm. when you understand, like, it really is pretty mind-blowing. And, you know, Your Flag Decal won't get you into heaven. I like the humor on that album a little more. It's just a little more my speed. It's very sarcastic, kind of, whereas here it's, you know, we've reached a point where the humor's not working. Not in a songwriting aspect, but from a narrative perspective in the songs. But yeah, through and through, it's great. And I love the closer on this thing to pieces.
I think that with all of the Appalachian kind of bluegrass and traditional folk that's being injected into this musically, you know, because the debut was more of a Nashville sound. It had the organs and it had all the production. Here you get a lot more mandolin, you get some banjo, you get some fiddle, and I really, really enjoy that. And to close it with that Appalachian close harmony, when that high note hits on it, it's just, it's very, and it puts it all into perspective for some reason.
Mm.
And to end it with such a simple statement, I don't know, it frames the whole album. It's a perfect way to end it.
And it's a period. It's a nice period on the entire, like...
Ends on a hopeful note as well. I like that a lot, because we've... By the end of the album, you have been through a lot. Even if, like, this thing seems to get to y'all more from a, like, sadness level, I think. Like, I see it more as very pessimistic and, like, melancholy, but never depresses me. I just, you know, I'm just listening to these stories and, you know, and really there's no explanation for the end of them all. It's kind of the conclusion is very general, honestly. But I don't know, it's just gripping.
I think the overriding themes throughout the whole thing that you can see in pretty much every song, even if it's about religion or about veterans, would be loneliness and a want for human connection. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get that on the first track, Everybody Needs Somebody. That is just throughout the whole album, even if he's playing the part of a character.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'll say right now, musically, I think I enjoyed John Prine's debut more, but... Like, just some of the songs were a little too slow for me. The album itself was a bit of a slog, especially near the back half. This album, it's consistent, it's tight, it's short, and more lyrically and musically and vocally, it just was so much more hard-hitting and made for a much better experience than the debut did. Light 9. I thoroughly enjoy this album, and just the feeling it gave me was much more than the debut ever did. I just enjoyed the debut. I loved this album.
You have redeemed yourself from last week.
Yeah, that was terrible. I just remembered what you were referencing with that 5. I mean, Jesus, man.
Dude, I didn't like Elbow.
You don't like that? God, that breakdown on Grounds for Divorce is like just makes my spine feel so strong. It's like it's so good.
No.
The keys, ding, ding, ding. F*** you. So we're going to talk about Brockhampton's, not their first album, but the one that really started to help them get traction in the industry, called Saturation One, in the context that this was one of three. There were two more albums after this, and it's commonly known as the Saturation Trilogy because they were all released in the same year. And the last time we talked about Brockhampton, we talked about their most recent release, Iridescence, their first major label release, essentially their major label debut with RCA Records, an album that... We all enjoyed to one degree or another. Chaz more so than any of us.
I gave it a 9. It blew me away.
I think we find them going in more experimental directions on that album, sometimes to a fault, admittedly. But as we go back here, we're finding more, and there is experimentation on this album, but we have much more hip hop on here than we do on Iridescence, I think. There's one rock song as opposed to several songs with various electronic influence stuff. It's more traditional here, I think. So that's why I chose this one. I kind of wanted to get back to their roots. I love this album more than Iridescence, personally, but I was curious to see what you all thought.
What did you give Iridescence to?
I gave Iridescence a 7, pretty much for the reasons that Brian mentioned. It had some great experimentation, some not so great experimentation. They took some risks, a lot of which panned out, and some of them didn't. It was a little bit inconsistent, but it had really, really strong highs. And
really the best mixed bag.
It was a flawed album, but it had a lot to offer in that. But Saturation 1, I can't say I enjoy it as much. And the reason is twofold. One reason is the production, which, even though it may not have the low points that Iridescence does, it doesn't have the high points either. And the length and the production just exacerbates the fact that this is over 50 minutes long, and it becomes a bit of a slog for me. But let that foreshadow what my score will be, but there is a lot of positive to talk about here.
This album is so tricky for me because Iridescence blew me away so much lyrically, production-wise, beat-wise. God, it's so good. Oh, the choir on San Marcos made me cry. This album is not that. This album is too long. Lyrically, it's just not as hard-hitting. There's a lot more brag raps, and there's not many good, like, mic drop moments. There are moments where lyrically it's pretty cool, like, and more, like, introspective, like Iridescence had. But man, this guy just says the same thing over and over. Like, I'm awesome. Dr. Bitch. You know, give me that money. Keep a cold Jane on my neck. Flies a jet.
Boys better treat me with respect.
Good chorus, but there's not many moments where I'm, like, being blown away. And I was expecting to be. I was very disappointed with this release. And the moments where there are awesome moments are so few and far between. And, God, by the time we get to Cash, just I'm feeling the runtime. I'm really feeling the runtime, which is sad because, like, Swim, Milk, Face, like, those are my favorite tracks.
Right.
God.
Those are probably my favorites as well.
It takes so long to get to them. And Gold's pretty cool. Gold grew on me. That was the grower for me.
Right.
Like, I really like the chorus. I like the effects on the, I guess, the backup vocals come in on the second time the chorus is said. Pretty cool.
And the hook on that track is great as well.
But just,
like, infectious. At first, like, you're maybe a little, and it's a little incessant at first, maybe, because they do go through it a lot.
And,
like,
I think some of the hooks do suffer from for being
that repeated. I thought that would be your biggest criticism.
It
I
is
totally
part
get
of
that.
Mine, yeah. But the hook on that particular song.
There are some songs where they repeat the chorus too damn much. We're at the point where it's like, okay, move on. You've made your point. Why are we still doing
this? I feel like a lot of the songs here could be a minute shorter.
Yes. And
that's why Tupac was one of my favorite songs on the album. It was short, it was sweet, it was sad and downbeat, it had some introspective lyrics.
Comes after four barn burners, in my opinion. Like, four absolutely great. It's a great cool down. It's been one of my favorites for a long time.
What disappoints me most is lyrically on this album. I was expecting, like, some great punchlines and introspective lyrics that Iridescence
I think there's
have.
Some great introspection
there
on this
are,
album.
There are, but like I said, it takes so long to get to them because most of the songs here are just brag raps and just very, like, run-of-the-mill hip-hop stuff that every rapper has talked about. What made Iridescence so cool to me was how much there were moments like that on them. But those moments were so few and far between.
And that album is much more introspective. It comes after a huge emotional point for
and
the group.
And it shows, and that's what made it so cool. And it talked more about, like, relationships. And I know one of the rappers is homosexual. It dives more into that. This album, he mentions it, like, one or two times.
Well, I don't think he's obliged to mention it anymore
it made Iridescence so interesting because he talked about it.
Right.
Here, it's mentioned a few times, but he doesn't go into depth. And I want him to, because there are no other rappers doing that right now. Coming out, not only
there's actually a line, to your point, there's a line on a song off of Saturation 2 called Junkie, where it's a very simple line. You haven't heard this either, I don't think.
I haven't heard.
Where he says, why you always rap about being gay? Because not enough rappers rap and be gay.
Yeah. He like, not only
really, and the song is one of their more experienced, like, it's one of their best cuts, honestly. Like, it's a really pretty mind-blowing moment.
But it's just, it blew me away, like, how much on Iridescence he not only was like, I'm gay and proud, but I'm going to talk about relationships and what I'm dealing with. There, you, like, in 2007, no rapper, gay or not, would even think about doing something like that. And that's what made Iridescence so cool. But here, like, there's one or two lines, and they're okay.
Why does 2007 come up?
I think he's just putting it in context of how far hip-hop has come in a short period of time.
Yeah. Okay.
Like,
sorry, I didn't understand.
You know,
I
was going, like, from the Bling era to this.
The Soulja Boy, like, time period, you know. Good God. You would be lynched and mobbed in the hip-hop community if you even thought about doing something like that. But here, just, man, and I really wanted to like this.
I'm not, you know, upset that you guys are disappointed. I'm glad that, you know, we listen, that there are going to be criticisms levied against this album, because I don't see a lot of that.
So why do you like this more? Is this your favorite Brockhampton album?
Yeah, it's close. It's really close between this and three.
Because I don't see why this would.
It's their, in my opinion, it's their most consistent. They're most catchy. We don't get a whole lot of experimentation on here, but when we do, pays off in, like, it doesn't pay off maybe as much as, it's not as high as other albums, but because this album's so consistent in the context of the album, they're even stronger.
I do admit, like, it is consistent, but it doesn't make up for the fact that it's too long.
Sure,
you know what I mean?
and it's a long album, but for me, I don't really feel that runtime anymore. Like, as we get to the middle, I used to feel just like you did around Fake and Cash. I was kind of like, around that point of the album, I was like, okay, kind of not feeling this that much. I never get that anymore. I'm just so, like, I'm excited for basically every track on here.
I start feeling that on the song Boys. It goes on just too long. It loses the steam. And I think the album starts fantastically. I think the first three tracks are pretty good. But that's where the album just starts to slow down, and it's just kind of hitting the brakes there. And
we got skits, too, just to add to the runtime. Well, maybe that was a good idea on paper, but God.
The skits aren't that, grating, though. They're
they're very short.
But why? That's my question. Why? You already have like a 50-minute album.
I think they're pretty smartly placed. Like, we get one after Tupac to kind of break up the book. I mean, those first four tracks, in my opinion, are pretty much flawless. I adore Boys. I know Boys isn't I think that's the most underrated track in their entire discography, honestly.
I love the
themes of them, basically them talking about, like, because they use this, they call themselves a boy band. And it's like, why you guys are a hip-hop group? I love the way they contextualize it on the song. I just think it's really
Yeah,
great.
And I would make the point that I kind of disagree with Chaz as far as the lyrics go. I do think that there are some pretty introspective, emotional lyrics on this album.
My favorite.
But I would also agree that they don't quite go as in-depth. And the main thing that's preventing me from connecting to the lyrics, because I do think there are a lot of good messages and themes on this album, is that I never really feel, I guess I can bring it back to the old velocities in music thing of establishing warrant.
Mm-hmm.
I never feel like I am giving much of a reason to care. As bad as that sounds, I don't feel like most of the beats here, at the very least, don't grab my attention enough for me to want to pay attention to the lyrics.
I was expecting some killer beats, because that's what really I loved about Iridescence
2. They're pretty simple.
But you can have some simple beats that are really some of the most well-known beats of all time are pretty simple. Here it's just kind of run-of-the-mill. I don't know. And another thing that I wanted to say is that, and talking about the runtime, I think Face should have been the closer. I think Face, just with that chorus and how he sings it.
Each verse is really,
And that's when the repetition plays is a good thing with how much he repeats the chorus.
It's
Waste is okay, but it just felt tacked on.
Yeah, I didn't really. I thought the songwriting on that track was just kind of meh. Like, I didn't really.
And they
weren't. His vocals were all right,
but they weren't really saying anything to be a good, John Prine, Diamonds of the Rough, bam, that's a closer. Fluffy, Ween's 12 Gold Country Greats, that's a closer.
What a good dog.
Here, again, it should have been Face. Face had such more of a harder point.
I would almost agree with that. It's just kind of like there's a context here where that's the first, that's the, that Bareface is the name of the guy doing the closer.
Yeah.
And so he's doing the closer for each of the Saturation trilogy, and each of them are this kind of
you
guitar
mentioned
ballad.
In Iridescence that they usually he just does the choruses throughout the album, and then on the ending track they give it to him to
he never does choruses on here. Bareface is absent from every track on Saturation 1 except the last one.
Yeah.
He really is only incorporated into every track on Iridescence. It's really the only time he's not just closing the album out. He might play guitars.
So I was expecting a pretty hard closer, and I was disappointed.
It's kind of hard without the context of the other ones, because that would become the theme throughout.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like that song quite a bit. I wouldn't say it's a favorite in the discography. It's, of the three, it's my least favorite.
My favorite moment is Milk and Face. That is,
yeah, they're great. I love those tracks to pieces.
That is where I got the lyrics that I was loving on Iridescence.
For me, the strength of this album comes from the performances. I think the lyrics are great on the album.
No, it's performed.
I would disagree, these guys are so
charismatic and bring so much to the table in terms of just being a rapper and having that limelight on you and just what are you going to say? What are you going to do to differ yourself from the bunch? And I think these guys got it.
Oh, yeah. This album certainly stands out from the crowd. Even if it has flaws, it shows a ton of potential. We've seen that potential come to fruition on certain songs on Iridescence, and I'm sure that it does to an even greater extent
on
given
Saturation
the public
2
reception.
And 3, yeah.
Exactly, and it makes me excited.
I remember
to hear
when
those.
Saturation 2 was dropped, everyone was talking about it.
Would you all be open to doing? I know normally we limit the sequels, but would you all do one more sequel for Brockhampton?
I would. Yeah.
Okay. I think as far as introspection goes, I think we get a lot of it on here. I love Don McLennan's verse on Trip. It's really sad. When he says wrists were sort of bloody, family full of athletes, I was sort of chubby.
Swim is a great song. That
love
is
Swim
probably
as well.
My favorite song on this album.
Swim
I think
was
the style
favorite.
On that one, the dreamy and pleasant sounding production really works for
it's
the group.
It's everything that I loved on Iridescence in a track.
Honestly, it kind of precursors those releases in context now with all of them. It really is one of the, there's real no like the refrain doesn't come back till the end, as far as I can remember.
So who's the artist that was kicked off after the whole?
Amir Van. He is the deeper voice you're hearing on here. On Face, he's the one who's I Need a Friend, You Need a Home. On Heat, he sings the chorus. Man, Heat's great. Wow, Heat is amazing.
Heat is okay.
And he has the great verse on Star where he says, I'm the black Tom Hanks. That's a great verse. Love
now,
that verse.
Now, Trip and Swim, right? You both discussed those, saying that you really enjoyed them, right?
My favorite songs are Swim, Milk, and Face.
But I think Trip and Swim, the auto-tune kind of...
Does that hurt it for you?
Hurts it for me a lot.
Oh, man. I think the auto-tune on Swim, like, is what really makes the song.
I think that auto-tune can, you know, it's been used to great effect. It's no longer a way to make subpar vocals better. It's an artistic kind of sound.
It's
just a vocal manipulation, like pitch shifting or anything else. But I do think it takes away from the personal messages on that song, especially Trip. You mentioned Don McLennan's verse. I think it took away from that verse, the auto-tune. Wow. I really liked what he was saying, but I think that the more introspective moments here that do not have vocal manipulation on them, and you get this with Kevin Abstract as well. I really, really like when he gets introspective, but there are some moments where there's so much vocal manipulation that, I don't know, the emotion doesn't transfer as well. And I think that happens to this album's detriment across the board. Any time, or most of the time, that auto-tune is introduced, I can't connect with it as much.
Man, I feel bad about that, but you've made a really good point in defense of your opinion.
And that's just me throughout the entire album. And if I heard this first, then heard Iridescence, would have made sense, but God, Iridescence was just so amazing to me. Mm-hmm. And I thought a lot of the experimentation was cool. It was interesting. Lyrically, it was so, across the board, fantastic. This is just so...
I don't think any beat or song here is bad. I just think that elevated beyond being decent.
Yeah.
There are a few here that are really good. My two favorite tracks on the album, which I would call great, would be the opener, Heat, which is hard-hitting, it's exciting, the chorus is catchy, it's memorable.
The most experimental on here as well. Like, there's a, it's a really hard-hitting rap beat, but there's also elements of, there's some noises that are kind of mixed in.
It's like a sonic freak-out at the
end. What makes this really disappointing for me is because the great songs for me are near the end of the album, and God, this runtime...
And you
run
feel like
time,
you're sitting through them, all this stuff
you
don't like
that much. I don't
want
to sit through an album just to get to those songs, because while they're great...
What did you like from the first half of the album? Did you like the opening tracks, or were you just kind of...
Lyrically, I just thought beat work, it was just and lyrically, I just thought it was just, I've heard this before from other rappers.
With Star, your issue stems from, I think Star is super unique, because I love all the really funny references.
And it's short as well, and Kevin Abstract's verse is
there's no hook
verse,
as
is
well.
Is that the one where he just keeps constantly referring himself to other things, like Bruce Campbell, I Got the Chains?
Yeah, this is multiple
That was
people.
A fun song. That was a fun song, but it just, but again... I want the introspective lyrics. I don't want brag raps.
Well, you don't really.
To talk about the other favorite song of mine on the album, Cash.
Which is a super, super, that is one of the most slept on tracks in their discography.
I think the guitar sounds really nice.
Oh, I do like the use of guitar
and
the beats.
The lyrics talk about racism quite a bit in a very effective way. The ooh-hoos are possibly the best moment on the entire album.
Towards the latter half of the track?
Yeah, it just adds this... what's the word I'm thinking of here? It's like this cathartic release. It's this very, very nice moment after a whole slew of difficult topics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that.
And I think it works really well. It's also not one of the longer songs. I think the shorter songs here work better.
I think there should have been more songs like that.
This album could have been significantly better. They wouldn't even have to change much. Just take a minute off of any song that's over 4 minutes long.
Yeah.
And these beats, because none of these beats are bad.
And I'd
agree.
They're
just not good enough to stretch out that long.
Funny, you guys didn't like the car revving on Iridescence. I loved the car revving. I thought that was a really cool beat.
Berlin, that's like their worst song in my opinion.
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
To this day, I cannot stand that. I really can't even stand that song, honestly.
It's just so funny how much I loved that album.
Mm-hmm.
And this, compared to this, I think it's just so much weaker. I don't know.
No, I get where you're coming from, and that's cool. It makes me excited to talk about them again, honestly, to bring back something that's maybe a little more akin to Iridescence.
But I think I might enjoy this more than Chaz does.
You probably do. I have a lot of problems
because
with
even though it was a slog for me, it was never not enjoyable. And I think that for all of the times that the lyrics don't transfer emotionally, they are still doing stuff that sets them apart. And there are some really, really great moments, even on the songs. You might have a song, for example, Face, where it's not mind-blowing, but the Don't Say That part is really funny, and it's memorable, and I remember
that's
that.
I don't think that's that track.
What's, Fake?
Yeah.
Face.
You said
yeah.
Face.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I said the wrong
thing.
Because
I was like, Face? That's one of the best songs off the album.
Yeah.
I like
Fake.
The Don't Say That as well on Fake. Like that. Yeah,
the Don't Say That part is really hilarious. I remember that part. But the rest of the song, you know, the beat is just, you know, it's good.
It's probably my least
like
favorite
I said,
song, too.
It's the great songs under the back half, and while these songs are fine, they're just meh to me. So to get to sit through all this meh to get to the best, it's just it's criminal. And I think that
criminal.
Wow.
Wow.
Arrest them.
I was expecting so much and I didn't get enough.
Mm-hmm. And that's fine, man. That's cool. Because I thought you would love this thing, so it's cool to be subverted.
I would too.
Now what if you took your expectations out of the equation?
Do you think you could look at it that way, maybe?
What if this was a band you never heard of?
Never heard of, and I heard this.
And you heard this album.
I'd probably be like, this is okay. Like, this is
think it would be as hot either, because you don't like your complaint is the brag raps, and which is the first half of the album is brag raps. First three songs,
and I
not
don't
really
care for that, because while there's some fun lyricism, it's just what made Iridescence so cool was that there was barely any of that on it. It was more about them as a group and how their individuals and what they deal with in their life. That is interesting. I want you to talk about that more. Here it's like, yes, you're cool. You make money. You talk about something else. We know. Strong Six.
I'm gonna mirror that. Strong Six. Certain Days, maybe a light 7.
Same here. I'm sure, like, if I was to give this another chance.
Because the highs for you are pretty high, but they're all towards the back. And there's you've talked about stuff like Swim in the Middle that you've enjoyed as well.
Yeah, that was a good moment on it for me. Just,
it's kind of a classic Six for me, where it's a good album with major flaws. And that would be what I would say. It's a good album. It's got some major flaws holding it back from being great or very good.
This thing has most of their essential songs on it. Heat, Gold, Star, in my opinion, Boys, Bump, Face, Milk, Trip. Well over half the track list here, a good 80% of it is essential listening, in my opinion, for Brockhampton. And moreover, I think that these songs are, while they're not as experimental as they're what would come later, and maybe the highs aren't as high on this album, they're so consistently good. And I was really just blown away with how into every track I got with more listens. And I think this album also has the most growers. You know, really we see them, it is a bit formative, I think. I think they're going to perfect their songwriting later on with cuts like Bleach and even some of their more hard-hitting, like Boogie, they're going to blow minds with that song. But I really can't deny that this is like the great start that, and really it's close to quality and the other two, Saturation 3 in my mind. So with that in mind, you know, I would, the bare minimum, like a light 9 on this thing. I would even say like a decent 9 on some days. Not only do I connect to this thing on a level that's like really, like a really strong personal level, just because it's not specifically to any one lyrical moment. It's just, you know, the general emotional feel of some of the tracks on the album and the hard-hitting cuts just, you know, really get my blood going. Yeah, you know, can't say enough good things about it. I think maybe when we revisit Saturation 3, I might end up liking that one more. I think that's a total possibility, but this thing is really strong. And I think your all's criticisms are super fair and super, like, valid. You know what I mean? Like, those are, and this album really never gets criticized. It's really hard to criticize Brockhampton, I feel like, because the fans are so passionate. So it's cool
which
to get.
Which is fine.
It's
and, cool and to I, get. And I feel that on Iridescence. But, I'm like, this album can do no wrong.
But it's cool to get a perspective that's like, hey, this is not that great of a debut.
As far, you know, as much as I've criticized this album, I can definitely see the appeal. I can see why someone would
connect to
it.
I like the idea of a boy band hip-hop group that does some experimental and industrial sounds from time to time with lyrics that can be very introspective. It's pretty fascinating and very impressive. And it sets them apart.
I would say they're greater than the sum of their parts on this album.
Absolutely.
I think that they all come together in a way that elevates each song, because we're getting so many verses from so many different perspectives. And really, Saturation 3 might be better because we're going to get more perspectives. We're going to see Joba, a member who does the chorus on Face and is not very present on songs on here. He's really only doing the singing bits towards the end.
I think he was my favorite on Iridescence.
I really enjoyed him on Iridescence.
Yeah, he was amazing. He is mind-blowing on that album. And it's crazy because he's really not even here on this album.
I was looking for him. I was like, where's my boy?
He's on Face. He's on the...
that's why I like Face so much, because that's when I finally got
on three. On three, I think you all are going to run into some pretty mind blowing tracks. Two is not essential listing for three, but you know, maybe like a cut like Tokyo deserves to be heard, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And so, and Sweet and Junkie are essential. Summer is the best Bareface song, so I would go check those out. And but we're gonna do three next time. I hope you all like it more. I think you will. I wouldn't say I'm disappointed, because I think the discussion was more interesting than if me and Chaz had just loved it, or if we had all loved it. I think it makes for a way more interesting conversation, which is, you know, the point.
So this has been a sequels episode, one that always has very back and forth and divisive discussion, I've found, and it's become one of my favorite themes. But next week, we have an unthemed episode. It's fair game, anything. We can choose any album, and the album... even really an album, what I've chosen for next week. It's a demo tape that was sent to 4AD Records by Throwing Muses back in the mid-80s. And it's what got them a record deal, and it's what started them off as a band. It's the Doghouse cassette.
This is my diet cig, most likely. Playboi Carti's Die Lit, a almost hour-long trap album. And I am probably going to get crucified for picking this thing. I can see the future, but I love it. I think it's great. And you all are going to listen to it, and I feel like you're going to be like, what is he talking about?
To be fair, I like a lot of trap rap, so I might fit on it more. Jacob is going to tear your ass apart.
This is 57 minutes.
Oh.
It's not, and really, you need three listens at most. If the appeal is not, you know, if the appeal... it doesn't appeal to you for the same reasons it appealed to me, and I think my other, like the many other people who loved it, because it get pretty good critical praise. It's one of the better, like in terms of trap albums that get critical praise, I think it's one of the better ones. And I would even put it, I think it could give Taboo
a
run for its money.
In the genre.
I think it could give Tenzel Curry's Taboo a run for its money for very different reasons.
Ooh,
but Jacob's going to hear it and hate that.
Going the complete opposite direction of that, it's time for my easy pick. This is an album that I've always wanted to listen to all the way through and experience it. I'm happy to say that Brian hasn't heard it either, and only Jacob has, so it's perfect. We're going to be doing the final, technically second, but final studio album by the band Slint, Spiderland.
This has been Unwarranted Music Opinions. I'm Jacob Lindberg, and I was here with Brian Courtney.
Hello. Goodbye.
Chaz Jenkins.
Hello. Goodbye.
And we will... be back to hopefully not strangle each other, and hopefully we will all leave the production studio in one piece next time.
I don't know why I said goodbye. You said hello.